Today we interview Joe Meyer, CEO and president of Shelter House. So I first met Joe when I was interviewing him as a finalist for the Moxie Awards in 2019. I was captivated by his passion and his leadership style within the nonprofit community. I thought, man, this would be the perfect person to interview for our podcast. This is the story of a man who has really wanted to help people and make a positive impact his entire life. I think that each one of us has this desire to feel good about the legacy that we are creating and leaving behind. And looking at the challenges that have finally come to surface over the past few months, I can't think of a better time to have this discussion. This episode will leave you inspired to be the voice in any cause that you are passionate about. Enjoy. You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses,
helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia.
Joe Meyer, CEO and president of Shelter House, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So now I've come to realize that those who are passionate about giving back typically have had some type of past experience which has made them this way. Has there been pivotal moments in your earlier years that led you down the path of working for a nonprofit, specifically in homelessness?
Looking back and reflecting, there's a couple moments that I can say really kind of helped me to form what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it and how I wanted to use myself to make an impact. One of those, I went to a lower economic school, and most of my friends were going to a more privileged school. And it was at that time where I was playing sports. I was doing well academically, and I could tell some of my friends in school, you know, were struggling. And administration saw that and realized that also, and they asked me to join a peer group, an affinity group. And it was at that moment where I didn't know why I was there, why they were asking me. I just knew that it was a support group of peers, and we were able to talk about problems and so forth and so on. And it was then that I realized that some of the issues that the students were bringing in and my friends were bringing in were much different than mine. I knew when I was going home from school that my parents would be there. I knew I was going to get a meal on the table when I woke up, when I got home. I knew I was going to have clean clothes to wear. I knew I was going to have a bed to sleep in. I knew what type of environment I was going back to every single day. And what I realized were the challenges and the obstacles that other kids were faced with when they weren't in school. So I later found out that kind of why I was in that group and why I was asked to be in that group is to be a mentor, so to speak. And I realized that I was learning so much more from my friends that were in that peer group than maybe they were learning from me. And the life experiences that they've had, they were so far beyond any experience that I had. And it was at that point that I realized that maybe I can make an impact. So my next pivotal moment really was when I started my career down here in Northern Virginia, working for an organization that ran a homeless shelter here in Reston called Cornerstones. It was Reston Interfaith at the time. And I was a case manager, a very young white boy who was a case manager working with people who were coming into that shelter who were experiencing homelessness, something that I had no idea anything about. Growing up, having no idea really what homelessness was, really, and having no idea what the working poor was about. I was in my 20s, young 20s. People were walking in my office who were in their mid-30s, mid-40s, sometimes mid-50s, mid-60s, who were coming into my office asking me for help. I had no idea the life experience that they had in order to get to where they are. I just knew at that point, I felt terrible. I felt terrible that they were going through what they were going through. And at that time is when I started educating myself on why people become homeless and what I can do, being a privileged white male, to be able to help them. You know, one of the parts that I missed earlier on was, you know, when I was in my peer group in high school, I realized I wanted to be a guidance counselor for kids, help coach them, whether it be through life skills or whether it be through athletics, until I got this first job. And then that's when it kind of changed to be like, okay, I can do something a little bit bigger, working with families who are experiencing homelessness. There are children in these families that need to be given the same opportunity and the equal opportunity that others are given. And then in 2005 is when I moved to Shelter House, which was a very, very small organization at the time. We had about, I want to say 20, 25 employees, and we started to really grow the organization.
Joe, so how did you decide that you wanted to grow Shelter House from where it was when you started there?
I realized I started seeing the talent that we had, or the talent that we were recruiting, leaving within a year because we were so small and we weren't able to provide opportunity to people within our organization. And if we were expected to make an impact, if we were, you know, if my vision was to grow the organization to make a bigger and broader impact on our community, I could not do it by myself, especially with getting good talent in and having good talent leave, which is when we set out to really start to try to expand Shelter House. In 2020, we're at about 140 employees. So we've grown significantly and making a much bigger impact and broader impact. We've also taken on the issue of domestic violence since 2010, since we see, you know, very direct parallels between domestic violence and homelessness. So, you know, when I say my passion in these pivotal moments was really around helping people, I'm seeing within our own organization people coming in who are starting jobs like I was 20 years ago. And I was provided that opportunity. And I want to make sure that people that are walking in Shelter House's doors, not just the people that are experiencing homelessness and domestic violence, but our employees who need opportunity, who want opportunity and take advantage of opportunity and want to grow their careers, that we're doing that within Shelter House's doors, and that people can grow within this organization. And that's the only way that we can create more leaders to go out and make a bigger impact.
And Joe, it's really rare to see someone stay on the same career path almost basically their entire life. Yes, guidance counselor to homeless shelter, but still the same type of purpose, I think, in helping people. But then it's also rare to see an employee go from entry level to CEO, president in an organization. What do you think led up to you being put into those leadership roles? What type of preparation did you put yourself through? Was this a goal that you had from the moment you walked into the doors of Shelter House?
I can't say that I'm a goal setter, that I'll sit down and plan out my next 5 years or my next 10 years. I'm more of somebody that seeks out opportunities. And this was an opportunity with where I was recruited to come and lead Shelter House. I have been, when I say given the opportunity, you know, that word given means a lot to me. And I say that because, you know, if I talk to other people, or, you know, people that know me, they're not, you know, they'll say, you weren't given it, you earned it. Yes, I earned it. But there's also a type of privilege that comes along with being a white, able-bodied, straight male in the workforce today. And that's in every workforce today. I feel like I'm doing a very good job, but I also have a platform that I need to raise that issue. And we need more Black leaders, more Black female leaders across all workforces in the United States. I did do preparation. I went to future executive director programs. I went to certificate programs. But again, I was afforded that opportunity through a boss that trusted me and knew I could get the job done. There are a lot of people out there that are fighting tooth and nail to be given those opportunities or to earn those opportunities. I see more that needs to be done. I've been told by people, Joe, you can go out and do anything that you want to do. You can go out and make this and make that and, you know, do whatever, or sell this or sell that. And my answer to that is, I don't think I can. What I know and what I want to do is to help provide opportunities for people that don't have them right now. And that's my biggest passion, is making sure, and that's what I get fulfillment out of, is when I see an employee come in Shelter House's door that may not even have a degree, and they get their degree, and then they go on to college, and they get their college degree and certificates, and they grow within this organization where they start out maybe as a part-timer working overnights, and now they're a case manager, and now they're in a supervisory role, and now I hear them talking about they want to be an executive director one day, and that's the path that they're on. That's what I get fulfillment out of, and I've seen that within Shelter House over the last several years.
Joe, like one of the things that I know you mentioned early on is, you know, you recognized at an early age the ability to be of influence, right? And you wanted to be able to help other people. And you therefore went down the path of really growing your skills to be able to do that, right? It comes back to the conversation of skills versus ability. So when you take a look at where Shelter House is today, and you go back in time and you think about, okay, how did I come up through the organization? And how has the organization itself come up? Can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe some pivotal moments for Shelter House?
Yeah, once again, I think it goes on the recognition and reputation of the leadership of the organization. We had very strong leadership. Shelter House was formed in 1981 and started running its first shelter in 1985. We always had very strong leadership within Shelter House. And my predecessor that was here 13 years as executive director had a very good reputation. What she needed was support in order to grow the organization, which is the opportunity that I was given, you know, to be able to recruit further talent and bring further talent in. But it was looking for opportunities to make a bigger impact. And in 2007, Fairfax County put out a request for proposals to open and run the Catherine Hanley Shelter, which is in Fairfax, Virginia. It's the largest family shelter in Fairfax County. It was brand new. It had a lot of visibility. There was a lot of support for it, but there was also a lot of non-support for it. So they needed the right provider to come in and make this work. It sits in the back of a neighborhood that is million-dollar homes. And again, it needed to be operated correctly. And from the county's standpoint, could not fail. Because of the reputation that Shelter House had, because of the leadership, my predecessor, Jewel McCullough, and myself, the county trusted us. The county trusted us to come in and stand this shelter up. And we did that. And we've been operating it ever since. So that was 2007. The proposals are competitive proposals that come up every, you know, 3 to 6 years. We have to rebid on our shelters. And we've been running the shelters that we were first awarded, our Patrick Henry Shelter in Falls Church since 1985, and the Catherine Hanley Shelter in 2007. So I would say that's probably the biggest moment in the Shelter House history, is really obtaining that contract and being awarded that contract to operate that shelter. Also with the domestic violence, you know, since we were operating family shelters, we were seeing that nearly 50% of the people that were coming into our family shelters have had a history of domestic violence. We also knew that Fairfax County had a domestic violence shelter that the government was currently running. So we worked very hard along with our partners to talk to the county to say that we as nonprofits can run this shelter a little bit more efficiently. And there's things that we can do as nonprofits, as private nonprofits, that the county government may not be able to do. And then that's when they put the contract out for a nonprofit to operate Artemis House, which is our domestic violence shelter. And we were awarded that contract in 2010, 2011. So again, another pivotal moment where, you know, Shelter House is not going to sit back and say, okay, we are satisfied with just serving this population. The evolution of homelessness changes. It changes yearly. It changes by decade. It changes by century. But by keeping pace with how we respond to homelessness, Shelter House has been able to get in front and has been able to address these issues and become part of the solution by operating the shelters and the housing programs that we operate. So, you know, we operate our family shelters, we operate our domestic violence shelters, but we have a whole nother division for prevention. We realized several years back that, you know, we can't just be waiting for people to come in our doors to serve them back in the housing. Why don't we start preventing them from becoming homeless in the first place? And one of our biggest growing programs right now is our prevention and rehousing programs, which is getting people back into rehousing people as quickly as possible, not letting them stay in the shelters as long, but also preventing them from working with landlords, working with employers, negotiating with landlords, housing complexes, to allow families who are experiencing homelessness back into housing so that we can continue to work with them on all of the other contributing factors that they may have, which may be training, education, mental health or alcohol disease, childcare issues. You know, there's a lot of different, you know, employment, underemployment, all those things that we're currently working with people that are currently in housing. We're not waiting for them to become homeless anymore. So it's that ever-changing way that we are responding to say that we can do more. And we will continue to do that. We won't sit back and just wait for someone to dictate or tell us, you know, this is the issue and this is how you respond to it. We want to get out in front of it.
Well, Derek and I want to get into homelessness in this area because we know that that's an issue here and one that we want to spend some time on. But first, I want to talk about Shelter House and how you've grown from 20 employees to 140 and plus. This would have to take a good culture. So what have you done to create a culture that can grow into a 100+ company?
Yeah, it takes a very intentional effort. And when I say by intentional, one, you have to be nice people. That's what it really comes down to. Now, it's not that simple, right? You can just say, well, you know, being a nice person is relative. It's about caring. It's about a caring culture. And I don't want this to come across gimmicky because it wasn't a gimmick and it's not a gimmick, but our culture really evolves around care. Back in 2007, when I was 2 years into the organization, we just obtained the Kate Hanley shelter. We grew overnight, basically, when we were awarded that contract. We were about 20 employees. We grew to, you know, about probably 60 employees at that time. And here we have now two shelters, and I'm in a position where I'm overseeing both shelters, but I see differences in both shelters. I see cultures, different cultures in each facility. And I thought if we are going to be one organization, we need to have the same culture. We need to build the same culture so that one doesn't feel less than the other. One doesn't feel greater than the other. So I started working on my leadership and how to become that leader of multiple cultures, bringing them together. And I was doing some studying and I came across organizational values and core values, something that I was looking around Shelter House's walls and I saw our mission, I saw our vision, but I never saw core values hanging on our walls. And I really didn't know what, I mean, I knew I had values because that's what my parents instilled in me, but I never knew what the value of organizational values had. So I started doing a little bit more research and I got someone to come in to help me facilitate creating organizational cultures. And we brought both programs together as one and we started talking about our individual values, which then in turn created our organizational values. And when I say it's not gimmicky, our core values are collaboration, accountability, respect, and empowerment. There's explanations around what each one of those means within those words. And when you say collaboration, accountability, respect, and empowerment, it spells care. That was by accident that it spelled care, but these were the four words that we as a collective, 40 to 60 people sitting in a room, thought it is important that when we come to work, we are following and living out these core values every single day. And from that standpoint, or from that time of us adopting as a workforce, not as a board, as a workforce, as our staff and employees adopted these values that we would carry out, that has grown to mean these aren't just words that we put on a wall. These are words that we carry out every single day. We have implemented peer recognition programs where we're catching people carrying out our core values. So if you see somebody that is collaborating with somebody, not in a general sense, but in a above and beyond sense, we now have five different facilities that we are running, that it is so important that we have cross collaboration amongst programs. and that people know each other within our program. So as I was challenged with back in 2007, just having these two programs, making sure that they feel equal, we now have these five or six facilities, including our administrative office, to make sure that we are all one. So we had to implement, and the staff wanted to implement, daily recognition programs for us to show our core values. We have quarterly care awards, which again is an opportunity for people to nominate their peers that are doing stuff well. It's a bigger award that comes with a bonus and things like that. But it's really about catching people doing something right. It's about catching people doing something right as it relates to our core values, as it relates to our collaboration, our accountability, our respect, and our empowerment. A lot of what's going on and the foundation of so many social issues right now can be solved or helped if we have those four values: the collaboration, the accountability to ourselves and to each other, the respect for ourselves and for each other. And then if we find ourselves in a position that we can empower somebody, we need to do that. It evolves every year, where again, it was values that we put on a wall to now we are doing this in our daily actions with each other, and we are recognizing them on a daily basis also.
You know, Joe, you and I grew up in pretty similar environments. You know, just talking through this previously, you know, we think about numbers, right? So, I mean, where we grew up, median household income was about $40,000 a year, right? And that's just kind of the way life is. But let's take a look at Fairfax County. I mean, Fairfax County consistently ranks as a top five, top 10 for wealthiest counties in the U.S. And median income is, you know, in the neighborhood of about $120,000 a year. Yet at the same time, Shelter House looks out and says, hey, you know, you basically need to make $70,000 a year as a household to be able to have a two-bedroom apartment in this area. So this kind of comes back to the fragility of, you know, one income in that household could make the difference of having a roof over your head or being in a shelter and homeless. So tell us a little bit about how that happens in this area. Like, what are you seeing as far as drivers for homelessness? What are you seeing as far as, you know, how that plays into your mission and your goals at Shelter House of helping people?
The major driver of people experiencing homelessness with the people that we serve, which is primarily families and victims of domestic violence, you know, the primary driver of that is generational poverty. Now, you peel back layers of generational poverty, you have systemic racism, where the majority of the people that are coming into our shelters who are experiencing homelessness are Black and African American and people of color. So looking at that, looking at the drivers, we need to look way past the surface of unemployment or even domestic violence. There are layers upon layers that we need to peel back as a society to start addressing the systemic racism that we have, and even further back, the institutional racism that we have within our country right now that prohibits people of color from getting ahead. So that's what Shelter House is. One of Shelter House's key initiatives are right now are addressing racial inequities that we see coming in. We're doing it internally. We're doing it individually with ourselves. And two, we're doing it from an institutional level, looking within Shelter House's walls to see what we can do differently and what needs to change within Shelter House to make sure that we aren't contributing to the inequities and the racial injustice that's going on in our society today. Then what type of influence can we have from an institutional level? Looking at our elected officials and holding our elected officials accountable, looking at our local leaders, you know, within county government, within corporations, what can we be doing to influence that? So I bring that up because it goes so far beyond just the response to homelessness and just the response to getting somebody back into housing or getting somebody their first apartment that maybe they never had. We certainly have disparities in our county. We look at certain parts of our county, multi-million dollar homes, and we have pockets of our county that are poor. And looking at those disparities, we need to start breaking some of those down. you know, we tend to right now, because it's what's affordable, is the families that are moving out of our shelters right now into permanent housing are moving into extremely low income neighborhoods. And it may be some of the same neighborhoods that affected, that impacted their homelessness in the first place, of why they became homeless. We need to change environments for people, and we need to start an integration process that allows people the same opportunities, people of all colors, the same opportunities. So again, our job as an enterprise is much bigger than just responding to that homeless, or just, you know, bigger than finding housing for people who are experiencing homelessness. It's really about creating that social change in order to make our jobs easier. Because you're absolutely right. Right now, our jobs are extremely hard when we have an individual that comes in with mental illness, who may be paranoid, schizophrenic, who may not ever be able to find a job because of his disability. And the only income that he has is disability. But you look out in our community and there's no housing for that individual. So right now, our jobs are very hard because where is the housing for all people? We do have affordable housing. And I talk about this often, is that, you know, people mix up the term affordable housing with housing that's affordable for all. Affordable housing can consist of a lot of things. Affordable housing can be a housing for our first responders, which is absolutely 100% needed, and for our teachers and for our nurses. We absolutely need affordable housing for jobs that are paid less. But we also need housing for people who are experiencing homelessness that don't have an income right now because they can't, because they may be disabled, because they need an opportunity in order to find that, to get education, to find employment, to start leading on their path to self-sufficiency.
Well, Joe, you mentioned that mental health, racial injustice, domestic violence, all these you just mentioned, they all lead to homelessness. How do the events that are going on now, but also that have gone on over the years, elevate these to increase homelessness? How do they increase the impact on mental health, the increase of racial injustice, the increase of domestic violence? Like, we think of COVID, we think of 9/11, we think of all these different things that have happened, the government shutdown. How have these all led to more homelessness, or are you seeing that?
Yeah, we absolutely are seeing it. You know, all of these, you know, everything that you mentioned is a contributing factor to mental illness, to people who cannot access the right medical support that end up in a much worse situation. So for instance, you know, veteran homelessness is something that Shelter House doesn't necessarily, that's not our main focus. However, we do have veterans that come in who are homeless. The PTSD that comes along with being a veteran for some, but also these life events that you just mentioned, you know, COVID-19, you know, we're seeing through data that it's impacting the African-American community much more than other communities. And then you look at healthcare and the access to healthcare for this community. So now you have two things against people of color, where they are dealing with maybe more of a burden than what maybe, you know, someone like myself is facing. Or, and if I am faced with that, I have access to the proper healthcare. People that are in poverty, that are on the brink of homelessness, do not have those opportunities. They don't have the opportunities to go seek mental counseling in order to make sure that they, you know, that their mental health is well. And that absolutely contributes to homelessness. Domestic violence, the same thing. Right now, you know, we have not seen an increase in calls for domestic violence, but we have no doubt that there is more domestic violence happening in our community. And one of the reasons is we are seeing the calls that we are receiving and the intakes that we are having. People, it's much, much more severe cases. So we're working with the hospitals more closely, who people are being discharged straight from the hospital into our shelters, who are in much worse shape due to the violence and the abuse that they had to endure. And what we're fearing right now is that there are people stuck in their homes who are afraid to call because the abuser is not leaving the home. They don't have the right access point or the right opportunity where if, you know, people were back to work, the abuser leaves, and the victim is able to call us. So that's our fear right now, that, you know, when people start going back to work, is how many calls are we going to be receiving, and what's going to be the trend, so to speak, for people experiencing domestic violence.
Yeah, Joe, I'd have to agree with you on that. I mean, we've just kind of been forecasting that as a ricochet effect of COVID-19. You know, not only are you a prisoner, but you're also quarantined. So you don't have a lot of options there, right? So think about this and pull this out a little bit more as far as the mental health side of things. You know, is it hard for an employee to be an employee at Shelter House, especially when they may have difficulty detaching or coping with what they see every day?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a question that actually gives me chills, and it makes me emotional. And it's just because that with our culture here at Shelter House, we're fairly large with a lot of employees. We have a culture, as I mentioned, that cares, but we have people that are able to trust in each other. And with that comes communication and people being willing to have conversations with their colleagues and with myself. And I know that we have people who are employed with Shelter House who have experienced homelessness in the past. I know that we have people employed with Shelter House that have been victims of domestic violence. Currently, I know we have people employed with Shelter House that have lost loved ones to COVID-19. I know right now people in Shelter House, the African American and Black community, is in pain right now because of everything going on, you know, and seeing what is happening and the murders that are taking place. So detaching from the work is not an option for some people because the work that we do is ingrained in how we live. People experiencing homelessness is how some people's lifestyles are right now. It's not about my numbers are down right now because I can't go to work and I can't sell this widget, so therefore it's stressful. Or I get home one day and, you know, I had a really bad day because I wasn't able to seal this deal, and there, you know, but now I can detach and I can go and do something else. The work that we do is working with human beings and impacting human beings. And so many of the people that work for Shelter House live it every single day. They live with the trauma of being a victim of domestic violence. So when somebody comes in that is a victim of domestic violence, it's much more relatable. And I'm not even sure if relatable is the right word, but you know, that stuff that they carry with them, it's a passion. It's not just a job. People experiencing homelessness and people coming in who are experiencing homelessness, you know, situations that our employees are hearing, it's around that passion that maybe I've been there before. It's very hard to detach and go home, maybe sometimes into a situation that they are in poverty. So, you know, it's very hard to detach when reality is in front of your face at work, but reality is in front of your face in your life too.
Now I want to talk about the future, like where you see Shelter House going over the next few years. You look at where you and your team have taken Shelter House so far, the current climate of our community right now. Where do you want to take Shelter House over the next few years? And I'll also add to that, where do you see homelessness and domestic violence going over the next few years?
It's easier, I guess, for me to answer the second question, not with a direct answer, but with a, we're not going anywhere as a society around domestic violence and homelessness if we don't do something about institutional and structural racism. That is the core of so many issues right now within the United States. And it's a direct contributor to homelessness. You look at the amount of evictions that are happening across our country to people of color. It's extraordinarily more than white people. So we need to start changing the institutional values or laws that we have right now to give people of color more opportunity. And it's not just about equal rights. It's more about, it's about equitable and making sure that we are taking that forward. So with that, with Shelter House, if we are going to achieve our vision, which is a community free of homelessness and domestic violence, we need to start there. And Shelter House is on our journey, which we started about a year and a half to 2 years ago. And our journey is around eliminating, corrupting racial injustices that are happening right now in our society, in particular, how it impacts homelessness and domestic violence. So, you know, as I mentioned, we are on our journey. We are looking at what we are doing internally. We need to start doing more outward facing and started to advocate and talk to our local leaders at the local level, at the state level, at the federal level to see what changes we can make. But we're also, you know, Shelter House is always looking for how we can broaden our expertise and impact, make an impact more broadly across our region. You know, we are looking for opportunities where and communities where homelessness and domestic violence is more prevalent in, and seeing what opportunities we have as an enterprise, as an organization, as experts in homelessness and domestic violence to start impacting those communities.
You know, Joe, if I'm listening to this from the outside and you know, just this mission you're on with Shelter House, which is just a phenomenal mission to be on, if I'm in a position of asking myself, you know, where do I put my support or how can I help? We're all ultimately dealing with finite resources, especially when it comes to time, money, et cetera. But how can people help Shelter House? And what's your recommendation on how they decide who to help?
Sure. There's several ways you can help any organization. Really, you know, it's your time. If you have time to volunteer, we have volunteer opportunities, whether it's serving meals at one of our shelters or whether it's using your expertise in what you do to help with financial literacy or, you know, help with governance of the organization to find more opportunities for us. There's also ways through contributions that can be in-kind contributions to our shelters. Supplies that that we currently need, those are ongoing and evolving. Also, financial contributions. Many people see organizations and donations, you know, that the Shelter House uses. We have about, I think it's like a 10% overhead or something right now. We need money to operate. We need money to support the families who are walking in our doors, but we also need money to operate. And in order for us to keep growing, we need to make sure that, as I mentioned, some of our employees that are providing the most critical services to people experiencing homelessness and the most vulnerable population in our community of victims of domestic violence are way underpaid. And right now we're basing, you know, a lot of our pay scales are based on government contracts that, you know, that were, or government grants that we contract with the federal, state, and local governments with. And I would like to be not independent of government funding, because it's extremely critical that government funding is available, and they've been doing a great job. But we need to be able to pay our people a little bit more, or not a little bit more, but a lot more, because, you know, a lot of the people that are employed within our organizations, not just Shelter House, but across the board of social service organizations, are literally one paycheck away from entering our programs. You know, so when we're looking at the front lines and the people that are choosing to work for our community, to get people off the streets, to make our community a better place and to give people opportunities, we need to be able to compensate them fairly. And then, you know, I would just say, if you're listening to this and homelessness and domestic violence just aren't your thing for whatever reason, that's okay. There is something out there that you care about. And the worst thing you can do is not be a voice for that cause, not to stand up for that cause, not to contribute in some way to that cause. We all have life experiences that direct us in that point us in the right direction or in a direction. And I can't say that homelessness and domestic violence needs to be your thing. But if it is, you can call Shelter House. You can get on our website at shelterhouse.org. You can call me. We can talk, see how you can get involved to help us to achieve that community free of homelessness and domestic violence. But if it's not, like I said, it is important that you get involved somehow, some way, somewhere.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate having you on. Is there a way that the audience, if they want to learn more about you, if they want to reach out, what's the best way that they can contact you?
So on our website, you can go to shelterhouse.org. There's a contact page on there. You can send an email to info@shelterhouse.org. You can direct that email to me, just address it to me in the body. I will make sure that I get it. All of our contact information is on our website. So please feel free. Everything gets filtered to me that needs to get filtered to me. If you just have general inquiries, they will make sure that they get to the right department, whether it be contributions, volunteerism, marketing, communications. We have all of that that you will be taken care of.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you both. This has been quite enjoyable for me.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at thenovabusinesspodcast.com.